Hey, what up, nice fam? Today on this episode, we're going live for the very first time. We're going to be tackling relationship questions that you guys wrote in, everything from parental relationships, how to handle your in-laws, how to handle each other. It was an amazing time. I'm so glad for everybody that called in and was brave enough to tell us exactly what it is you're going through. We do our best to answer these questions. We hope you guys enjoy it. Here is Knights at the Roundtable. And welcome to another episode of Knights at the Roundtable. It's your boy, Man Weezy, with my queen to the left, Angela Johnson, and my homie to the right, Be Real. And we're doing our first live podcast tonight. Don't know how many people are watching. I can barely see the little eyeball. But I'm grateful for everybody who answered or who asked questions, because this episode is going to be based on relationships and getting advice for that, whether it's familial, so like things between your family, or whether it's things between your friends, or whether it's your boyfriend, your wife, your husband. Doesn't matter what it is. So we're extremely excited. We got some people that wrote in. Hopefully more people will write in. Ooh.
We have some wine tonight. The other night I went to BevMo and just like stocked up on a lot of bottles in the $10 to $15 range. I was just like, yeah, put them in the cart. So this right here is Cap Insula Red Blend 2015. I have no idea how it tastes. Did you taste it or what did you
think? Yeah, it's decent. Like it's a little bit, I feel like it's a full-ish bodied kind of wine. And I like it, actually.
Is the $10 or $15, is that like, what price point is that? Is that like entry level or?
Nah, like, yeah, that's like.
Yeah, I mean, if you go less than 10, then you're like, good luck. I don't know what you're going to get in that bottle. But there are some really strong bottles that are, I mean, when I say strong, I mean like they taste good. That I get for like $12 all the time.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay.
But like, I think $30 is like a nice bottle to me. Like 30 to like 40, I'm like, okay, whose birthday is it? Because this is not just Tuesday.
Who is getting married?
Yeah.
I love it. Hey, I want to jump right into this episode because I already got like five people since we started who sent in questions.
Dope.
So I say we get at it. Y'all with it?
Let's get it.
All right, first question we're going to do. Brandon, this is to you. How did you reconcile with your mom after the divorce? Who started the path back and how?
That is a great question. You know, one of the things that I think was just needed in that sort of dynamic was just humility. Like, it's so funny because I kind of regret being so prideful. And to me, I was the delay in that relationship. Now, again, like, that's at the end of the day, you only have control of what you bring to any relationship. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think we forget that truth. Mm-hmm. And we actually put these expectations on this other person that they have to come and they have to meet this. And so for my mom, it took just a lot of humility on my end. It took humility on her end. To understand, like, hey, we can start fresh again.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that was also the other thing that delayed, of like, when you're making that sort of like bond with somebody who you've shared all this like rich history with, sometimes there is this expectation that that relationship ought to look like what you guys had before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm so thankful, because my mom and I, we have like a dope friendship now. And it looks nothing like what we used to have, but in a new way, it's fresh and it's great. And it took just a lot of like saying sorry and just humbling yourself.
Yeah.
And just admitting like, man, I was holding on to my hurt so much. And then that's another thing too. Like oftentimes in those kind of tense dynamics there, what can happen is your own insecurities and your own fears get exaggerated in your hurt. And what appeared to happen on their end coming towards you.
Mm. Right.
So a lot of the stuff of me feeling mad, me feeling pissed at my mom or whatever, was more a reflection of my own fears and insecurities rather than the actual action that was committed against me.
Right.
So that was, it's humility and it's years. Like that didn't happen in 1 year.
Yeah.
Like my mom and I, that was almost like a 5-6 year journey.
Wow.
Wow.
So it took some time. And encouragement to whoever that was for. Just stick
with
it.
I'm glad for asking. So we'll get the next question. Is there a limit? We've dealt with this before. Is there a limit to help family financially. Example, if you're doing well, but a member asks all the time.
Well, I think it's important to set up boundaries for yourself, so you don't resent being a giver and generous and stuff, and knowing when you are being an enabler versus being an actual blessing to someone. I know my husband has more specific rules, I guess, on lending money.
So I have a rule. Here's my rule. His rule. for any of y'all that are lending money to family, here's the rule. My rule is, if you don't ask me for advice on how to spend the money, do not ask me for money, because I have no idea where your mind's at, what you're doing with the money you currently have. So I don't want to be feeding a bad habit. So if you're not asking for help on how to spend the money, then don't ask me for money. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Does that not seem, I feel like that's responsible.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If you're gonna come and ask me, most people get prideful in that sense, because they're like, well, who are you to tell me how to spend my money? Or why do you wanna know how I spend my money?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, we're currently at a juncture in life where you're asking me for mine.
Yeah.
I know how hard I work for mine.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're doing with yours.
Question for you. Have you always felt that way? Because I know you have some stories where you were like extremely generous to people.
Yeah.
And it was there kind of like a main truth or catalyst that caused you to come to this place now where you're like, look, if you're not going to ask for my advice how to spend this dough, like, I'm not going to give you this.
Yeah. Break. Yeah. So there's probably like 3 or 4 relationships that have been completely shattered because of money. And it wasn't because of me being mad at them for not paying me back. It's the guilt they felt from not paying me back. Hmm. You know, because it's a lot of money, and now they don't talk to me. Mm. So the relationship was severed. So now I don't do the lending of the money. It's very rare. Mm. It's very rare that I do it unless I'm fully okay with not getting it back. You know what I'm saying? But then 9 times out of 10, that ruins the relationship, because then the person knows they didn't pay us back.
Yeah.
I have a good friend who's very wealthy, and early on in our friendship, we would have some conversations where I would be like, wow, she doesn't seem very like generous with her family. Hmm. And then she shared some stories with me about how her being generous to her family actually caused a lot of problems in her family. Hmm. And so now she has some very like strict boundaries. Like, no, she's like, clearly I am the most wealthy person in our entire family, and I used to be the one that you guys come to for money, but because of that, you guys started treating me like this and our relationship ended up like this. Hmm. So I don't give anybody money anymore. And she's just like, nope, nobody gets money. Hmm. And that's for her and how she handles it. But
money's,
I think,
thing.
Yeah, it's for me, it's touchy. It's like every situation is different. I don't have a blanket like, nope, we don't give money. And I don't have like strict, I know we go mostly by Manny's rule of, if you don't ask me for advice.
To be fair, it's been my side, mm-hmm, of the family and friends that have ruined it, not hers. So it's definitely my side, which is why I'm more strict, because I'm like, hey, me and my wife work hella hard, and it's my friends that aren't paying me back. So it's like, yeah, I need to calm down. So yeah. I just tell my friends right now, don't ask. It's not that I don't want to give you. It's just that my friends have really bad track records. So on to the next. We have somebody that I want to call. Do you guys want to try doing a call?
Let's do it.
Okay. I'm going to try to call this person and we will see if they pick up.
I'm not sure if I like the wine.
All right. Let's see.
Like at the very end.
I don't know their names.
It tastes like banana.
Banana pudding.
Tastes like banana.
I've never had a wine that tastes like banana before, man.
No, it doesn't taste like banana. It tastes like banana. Like, you have to say it like that because that's what it tastes like.
Yo, what the heck? It's not, the call's not going through.
Oh, no.
Come on. Pick up the phone, baby.
Oh, come on. B, what does your signal look like? Oh, wait.
I got LTE, man. It's that Verizon.
Leave me a message. I'll call you back.
Oh, no, girl.
Boom, boom, boom.
Banana.
Hey, we're going to leave you a message because I was texting with you, told you that we may call you, and we're calling you. We wanted you to be on the podcast, but now you didn't pick up. We hope you have a wonderful day and watch the podcast. All right, love you. Bye.
Bye.
All right, keep it moving. Next question. How do you set aside political and religious views to maintain a relationship between siblings when the other is so opinionated and vocal about their views?
I throw Bibles at them.
Boom.
Boom. Scripture verse, pow.
Boom, hit him with the word. No, I think we've dealt with this in our Patreon, where we've some of the Patreon members have had the exact same situation where they're going for Christmas or whatever, mm-hmm. holidays, and they're dealing with people that are super political. And I think the best thing to do in that situation is, there's something with politics that I've learned is that you cannot change the way other people think. Like, you can try to out argue somebody, but 9 times out of 10, especially with politics, most people are arguing from an ignorant place. You know, like, you see those funny videos where we've been laughing at them, where you know they asked certain supporters, hey, well, why do you support so and so? Most people do not know a lot about politics. They're voting like they've always voted, or like they've been told to vote, or, you know, in the church, we all know that we've been told to vote Republican. That's just the way we vote, because they're the ones that don't kill the babies and they're the ones that don't do the gay marriage. So that is the clear, holy choice for the church, mm-hmm. you know? And if you land outside of that, it's a problem. So I think the best thing to do is be okay with other people's ignorance, or be okay with other people's opinion. Like, whether you think they're wrong or right, I just don't know if it's worth creating a massive hole in your family or in your friendship to argue something that probably 9 times out of 10, the other person is arguing out of pure ignorance and just emotions. Not like they're going to actually give you policy and actually break it down on why they're voting for who they're voting for.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, because when you talk about politics and you talk about religion, like, for most of us, like most people, I'd say that's like a sacred space for them. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's crazy because of how passionate these arguments get.
Yeah.
Like, that's really just revealing how sacred the space is inside of them. And a lot of people derive their value and their identity from these two spaces. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, because in some of those, like, you could present the greatest facts in the world that prove exactly what you believe and why you believe it, and still those facts wouldn't be good enough to change someone's mind.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So it's always interesting, because it's like, hey, for some people, like, politics and religion can be super things like they're passionate about. Mm-hmm. So it's like, when you're getting in conversations, like, you love to get on things that you're passionate about. And mm-hmm. you're like, man, I really love this. I love learning about this. And so it's sometimes hard to be able to be like, put yourself in a space knowing you're not going to be able to talk about those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're just going to have to be okay with hearing some things that you know not to be true. But then at the same time, too, there's always this weird thing inside. You're like, but that's wrong. Like, I should say something.
Right.
And yeah, it's tough. Like, I feel like I'm a little bit lucked out, because I feel like most of the people I'm surrounded around, we're kind of like, we're similar along the same path. I have a few probably that lean probably more right, more conservative friends.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, like, during the season, it's one of those things where there's going to be a lot of relationships that need to be repaired going into the next couple of years.
Sure.
All simply because of what happened mm-hmm. with this last term, last president.
Yeah. I think my theme of the night for all these questions is going to be boundaries. I think if you have a relationship with your sibling or parent, or whoever it is that you value, and you want to have a relationship with them, and you know they're completely opposite views politically or religiously, then you have to communicate boundaries. Like, hey, we don't talk about politics or religion. Like, I love you and I want to be friends mm-hmm. with you. I love you and I want to have a relationship with you, but we can't talk about these things because that's going to strain our relationship and it's not worth it. Like, I just want to love you for you and who you are. And you have to have those conversations. And like, my dad is super conservative and I don't agree with him on any of his politics. One of my best friends, her dad is ultra conservative, and they just had a talk recently, her sister, her and her dad, via text that was like, because they were asking him about like the insurrection, being like, so are you okay with this? You're proud of this? This mm-hmm. is what you stand for? And he like replied to them and was like, no, I don't stand for violence. I don't approve of that at all. I think moving forward, we should not talk politics with each other. I love you guys. And, you mm-hmm. know, we should just leave it at that. And sometimes that's what you have to do. And I get it. Some people are like, well, I'm not mad at you for your views. And mm-hmm. then the other person's like, yeah, but your view is that you don't want me to have rights because I'm gay or whatever. Right. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's different. It's not just a political stance. It's like where you're drawing a line on my actual existence and freedom, yeah. you know? But so I get how sometimes you can't really put it aside, mm-hmm. but as much as you can, I would say draw those boundaries. If you really value that relationship, just yeah. say, we don't talk about this. How are your kids? Let's
yeah.
stay there.
Yeah.
Well That's said, good. Queen. We're gonna give a call.
Call him up.
Y'all keep, you can keep talking. Let's call see. Let's up. See if call this.
Who is this one?
Oh, well, you'll recognize his voice. I think.
Uh oh. Somebody we know.
Yeah.
Dad, is that you?
This reminds me like the show Crank Yankers when I used to grow up watching.
Yeah, this is Ted Brown.
Hey there, caller.
Hey there, man. How you doing?
Good. How's it going?
Good, man. It's good to hear from you.
You don't know.
Who is this?
This is Jordan. Jordan, you have really good questions, okay? And I'm yeah. loving. I'm
Your
loving.
Jordan?
Yeah, my Jordan. Our Jordan.
Oh. I'm loving the questions. Here's Jordan's questions. Jordan, I'm gonna expect you to answer one of these, okay?
Who, all right.
You get to choose which one. Here's his four.
Jordan's right. got good questions.
Who was your first crush, and what were they like? Can you describe what your first heartbreak was like? What's something you used to believe about relationships but no longer do? Sex playlist, yes or no?
Yes.
Jordan, I'm going to let you answer first. Which question?
Oh, man. All right. Dang, I was not. Sex playlist, yes.
Babe, remember our sex playlist where I played that one song and you thought it was worship music?
Oh my gosh. Manny's sexy time playlist was like Donnie McClurkin type
we
sounding.
We fall down.
Yeah, and I was like, what is this worship song?
Nah, it
like,
was that
no.
one dude. It was that one old school artist.
He was trying to get to the throne room.
He was. He wanted to anoint me with some holy oil. I was like, nah, bruh.
He's trying to get into the temple.
Okay. What then? Can you describe what your first heartbreak was like? I'll describe it. It was my senior year of college. That Canadian chick.
Yep.
In Bible college. So in Bible college, you know, everybody knows it goes to Bible college is ring by spring. So everybody's ready to get married, and it was 2 weeks of her chasing me, and she couldn't get to me because I was dating Jesus. That's right. I
you
said
were too
it.
Holy.
I was oh, dating yeah. Jesus. And then all of a sudden I let my guard down and I start dating her for 2 days and then she leaves me in 2 days.
You're so hard, bro.
And I was heartbroken for 6 months. I couldn't get over her. Wow. 6 months it took. It was embarrassing, but I never cursed her. I only showed her love because I felt like I was trying to teach me forgiveness. And sure enough, a year goes by, next semester, she comes up to me and she apologizes and say, I'm sorry for what I did to you.
What's interesting about that is...
Jordan, be thinking of yours because I want to hear this crap.
I think about a heartbreak that I had. It was not my first one, but it's one similar to that where I dated somebody for a very brief amount of time, but it took me out. Like, I was like depressed afterwards. And I remember my mom and my sister being like, what happened? And it really ended up being less about him and more about the what I was learning about myself and my, I felt disposable. Mm. We only dated for a little while, but he just disposed of me. And so I really Oof. Felt disposable. And it was a lesson in my worth and my value and like what wasn't I enough of? What couldn't mm-hmm. I? And so like, I was really broken, but it wasn't about him. Mm. And everyone around me thought like, what was it about this guy that did this to her? And I was like, no. He was just the gift. He was the tool that taught me these lessons. So yeah, maybe there's a little bit of that in
yeah,
your
100%.
Situation.
I'm glad I didn't marry her.
It's not about her. That was you dealing with 100%. Like your self-worth.
100%. Jordan, what's yours?
Man, it would have to be, this would have been 2015. And I was in a relationship. I was actually engaged to be married. And it like completely fell apart. Yeah, I don't want to badmouth, you know, that person, but essentially, she wasn't who I thought she was. And so, you know, we were 3 months away from like the wedding date. So we, you know, we had just had all the like save the dates printed.
Oh,
we had the venue reserved, like everything. And it fell apart and it was like ugly. And I remember literally the day it fell apart, I was at B's house.
Yeah.
I had like a conversation with her and then I drove to B's house. And then that night it like ended. And I knew B knew like stuff was up with me because we were talking about it. And I just remember being so like angry and frustrated, but also kind of questioning myself like, okay, what did I do wrong? Because this thing, like, it's ending today. Like, I know it is. Mm. And there's no way of saving this thing. So immediately I went into, like, what did I do wrong? And kind of looking very, like, introspective. But then later on, you know, having people in my life help me to actually see the big picture. And not to say that I wasn't a part of it, because the relationship is two parts. But to see the bigger part, that there was just things on her end that were not acceptable, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Eesh. Man.
Yeah. Dodged a bullet, bruh.
Yeah.
I really did, because I'm married to this dime piece that is dancing right in front of me right now.
Fire.
Let's go. Sex playlist, yes. You
know, let's go. Sex playlist.
Yo. I don't got just one. It depends what kind of mood. No, I'm just kidding. I'm completely kidding.
Freaking love you, Jordan. Thanks for calling in. I totally forgot that I don't think the live people can hear our conversation.
Oh, no way.
But they'll hear it when they rewatch. Yeah. Hey, Jordan, love you, bro. Gotcha. We'll talk soon.
Hey, love you guys.
All right. Later.
Yo, my first heartbreak was in 7th grade. This was like the kiddie pool of love, you know?
Aww.
Like you're like, you start getting feels. Like it was like my first crush. Her name was Ashley. And she lived in Vegas. And at that time, like, I was in Vegas like every other month.
For what?
My dad was speaking at like this one church there that's pretty well known. And I had basketball tournaments in Vegas all the time. So found this little cutie with a booty and was like, yo, what's up? What's good? And so, you know, it's like back and forth or whatever, and it feels, and like you're just in this kiddie pool of love. Like you haven't experienced those kind of feelings before of like, ooh, I'm sprung, all the sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up ending up, I remember I was at the airport flying back home. And now again, this is funny because I'm in 7th grade. Mm-hmm. I'm at the airport. I'm flying home. She calls me on my phone and she was like, hey, you know, like I've really been thinking about things and I think it would be best if we were just friends. And my heart was broken. I literally did not eat for like a couple days. I was so torn. And again, it stung because I never actually really heard those words again from somebody else. And again, I wasn't even in a ton of relationships, but it was the only girl that like really broke me in that way where it felt like it was my ego that was bruised. Because it was like, I can't get you back.
Right.
Like in as far as like quid pro quo, you know, whatever. And so yeah, she told me I think it'd be better if we were just friends. And years later we ended up connecting again. And it was just very briefly. We were both in college and I was at Berkeley and we were playing Arizona State, and she hit me up on Facebook at the time, was like, hey, I'm coming to see you play tomorrow night. And it was like all these emotions got stirred back from 7th grade. It was like,
oh my God.
Oh, you're coming to watch me play. Man, look at the irony.
You're about to see what you lost.
But that heartbreak, man, it was the first big blow to my ego.
Yeah, that's the
and
thing.
And that's
it's
really
the ego.
What it is.
Mm.
So.
All right, this next one, I was going to call her, but she's at the park with their kids. This is all happening live, y'all. And so for those of y'all who we're actually making phone calls, if we go silent, it's because we're listening to the phone call. But the awesome part is you're going to get to hear the phone call when you play it back. So that'll be awesome. So this person had a good question. So she said, my husband started our business, Although this is his dream, as his wife, I chose to stand beside him and dream with him. Mm. With that being said, let me give you some context. We have 2 kids, 5 and 3. I am a SAHM for the last 6 years. Does anybody know what that is? SAHM?
No.
Okay.
Stay at home mom.
Stay at home mom.
Wow. Good job.
I'm a stay at home mom for 6 years. My. My husband,
so stupid.
My husband also.
Babe,
we don't use this terminology.
Wait.
My husband also works. He's daily 9 to 5 on top of our new business, which means I'm with the kids 25/8. Oh, I see what you did there. My question is, how do you support your spouse's dream when it means putting your life on hold?
Ooh. That's tough.
You know. I am a dreamer, so this hits me because I think I've been, I don't think I put mine on hold on purpose. There have been times in me and Angie's marriage where a dream was on hold by, I don't know if choice is the right word, but when my ministry kind of fell apart, the group one thing, when we met, I was in group one, touring the world, everything was gravy, I guess like 4 years in. 4 years in, it ended, and I was basically kind of unemployed, but not really. And I took a year and a half of just soul searching. And I think, speaking as a husband, the best thing that Ange did for me was that she never pressured me to go walk outside of my purpose. So there were so many times, and for you, I guess this is what I'm asking, identify whether or not your husband is in his purpose, or do you think he's just wasting his time at a 9 to 5? Because luckily, my wife was able to identify that I was in my purpose. And so I would literally go up to her and be like, babe, if at any point it annoys you that I'm still home trying to figure out my life, I'll go get a real job. I don't know what it is because I haven't had one since 99, but I will go get a job and make money. And she would always be like, no, for what? You don't need to. Just do your thing. And through that, a year later, I get a $1 million record deal. But it was because I took that time to freaking chill, find my voice again, start making music again. And that was at the end. It was probably like a year and a half in. Mm-hmm. And then I make up for it by getting that record deal, which then got us another house in Nashville, got us, you know, more stuff. So like I actually made money, and I was so grateful that not once did she make me feel less than or like lazy or just like not anything.
There's something to be said there too. I am well aware that I'm in a position to where I didn't need from my husband. Now, if you put us in a spot where like I'm not a headlining comedian, I'm just an up and coming and I'm bringing home just like a few $1,000s to pay our rent and some groceries.
There wasn't even a question.
Then I don't think I would have been as like, just find your voice. Just figure it out. I'd be like, nah, bruh.
You wouldn't have to.
Go to Barney's or whatever your favorite store is that you like to shop. I'm gonna need you to apply.
You would
send in your application.
You would have never had to do that because I would have never. I've been working all my life. I started working at 12, you know, so I'm not, the farthest thing I am is from a lazy person.
Right.
So if we were in that position, you would have never had to do that.
But so, I wanted to highlight the fact that I'm aware of like our situation is different. But for this woman where she's saying, how do you support your spouse in their dream while putting yours on hold? I think you have to have clear communication. And what does this time frame look like?
Yeah,
and are we talking in advance? Do I get a turn as well to chase my dream?
Here's the tough part about that is that when you put a time frame on a dream, it's like you're getting in the way of some cosmic things. Okay, because my first record deal took me 12 years. From beginning to the fruit, 12 years. How many people would have been down for 12 years? They probably would have quit at year 4 or 5. You know, like you don't know. Remember the Terry Crews story? Remember when he's in Hollywood and he was working as like a janitor or something and auditioning. And he came to his wife and he had 4 kids at that point. He was like, that's it. I can't keep doing this. Like we're living like... you know, like some poor people. And his wife was like, no, you have to keep going. And then it became Terry Crews. Well, so I'm like, it's tough when you put that,
when
that
I
time
say,
limit.
Like, not put a time limit on. If you don't achieve your dream in 5 years, then give it up. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying, okay, in 5 years from now, we're going to do a little adjustment.
Yeah.
I'm not staying home with the kids 24/7. Mm-hmm. We're going to get a babysitter and we need to sacrifice. Guess what? You don't get to go to the gym anymore because that money is going towards a babysitter so I can go chase my dream as yeah. well as you chasing your dream. Because right now I'm holding down the fort. I'm home. I'm with the kids. I'm taking them to the park, taking all these places so you could chase your dream. That's great. Yeah. In 5 years from now, if you are not at that place, that's fine. You can still chase it, but we got to do a little adjustment, a little renegotiation. It's time to renegotiate this contract mm-hmm. because I would also like to pursue my purpose
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
And so where can we sacrifice? Okay. Because that money is going to babysitter now because these, you know, 5 hours a day, I'm going to be working on my book or whatever it is that she wants to do, whatever her dream is.
I think it's important, though, to make sure that she is doing things in the meantime to help feed and bring life to her in those dream areas. Mm. Now, that might not look like completely pursuing it, mm-hmm. but that might be continuing to help inspire yourself in that direction. Like I just, the story I think of is my mom, who we've had on the podcast before, and she was in a marriage with my dad, I think like 21 years, ended up leaving. And in a lot of ways, she felt like she had put her dreams on the back burner for so long just to support my dad's ministry. Mm. And, you know, obviously there's a lot that goes into that. But I think if things had to get redone, I think there would have been some adjustments a little bit sooner. And like as far as my dad into my mom's relationship, but then also too, I think with my mom, there would have probably been some like actually pursuing some of those things, you know, and just standing kind of clear of like what you're saying of like, hey, like I'm now feeling like I'm dying inside mm-hmm. and I need to do some things that help me come alive, which are mm-hmm. like those dreams. So, yeah.
Communication.
Mm. Yeah.
That's good. Here's a question. How do I deal with my partner I truly love so much? Her depression and anxiety is affecting our intimacy. Mm. We've been together for 7 years. I know love is there. It's just physical touch isn't there.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, communication is my first thought. And sometimes it's not as easy to communicate these things, but that's where therapy is very helpful. And I would ask this person, is your partner in therapy to work on this issue? If you have communicated to your partner, hey, I would like more physical touch from you. I would like more of this intimacy. That would help fill my cup more. And if that's what this relationship is about, you fill my cup, I fill your cup, so that way we always have a full cup, because I pour myself into you, but then you pour yourself into me, so now we're both full all the time. So if it's that and you have expressed to your partner, I would like more in this area, and your partner feels stuck, like I can't give you that, I don't have that to give, what partner can you do to work on that? Is that therapy? Mm-hmm. Going to see a therapist? Is that meditating? Is that going inner healing? Like however you achieve that kind of healing, are there any kind of steps being taken to help this area? So it's like grace on both ends, which you and I have experience in that, of you having grace for me as I figured out my sexual trauma from the purity culture, mm-hmm. from just my own insecurities. And Manny would express to me his desires. And I always just like, well, I'm tomboy. I'm this or I'm that or whatever. And you have to get to a place where you actually do the work to help your partner in your current situation.
Yeah. Well said, my queen.
Yeah.
I just got a text message from the person that we try to call first. Mm. For the live streaming, you probably won't hear this, but rewatch the episode so that you can hear what's going on. Let's see if she picks up. She's been texting back and forth.
Let's go. Pick up the phone. It's a great Travis Scott song.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
We got you.
Hi.
What is up?
What is your name?
You can call me what my boyfriend calls me.
What?
Which is not my name.
Okay.
He calls me Big Butt Becky.
Big Butt Becky. Your boyfriend calls you BBB. Okay, I'm with it.
Triple B.
I'm very interested in your question. I'm gonna read it out so that the people that are watching can hear the question, and they won't hear the answer, but we'll kind of do a recap. And so you say your boyfriend of 4 months is very interested in meeting your family. Oh, isn't very interested in meeting your family, right? Because y'all are both divorced, post-divorces, right? The only people they care about meeting him is your family, your mom, your brothers. Yeah. But y'all don't want to do the family meeting things. I'm assuming it's because you probably think it's too early.
Yeah, like, we think it's too early.
But your family wants y'all to meet.
I've met his family by coincidence. Ooh. And,
I can see where that can get.
Right? So my mom is like, you met his family. Why can't he come meet us? I'm like, because you're the only ones who care about it right now. His family didn't even care about meeting me yet. Like, it just so happened.
I can see.
It was like an accident that you guys, like, ran into each other or something?
Yeah, kind of. Like, I was hanging out at his house, and he had to go to his mom's to grab something, and I went with him. It was not a planned thing.
Sure.
And his mom was there, and, so now my mom is sort of like, you've been together for 4 whole months, and I just need to meet him. And mom, I love you. You don't chill.
Let me ask you something. Are you Spanish? Are you any kind of Latin?
No.
Okay. What's your background?
I'm not any kind of Latin. My background?
Yeah, your ethnicity. I'm curious.
I'm just white.
You're just white? Damn. White. I thought you had some Latin in you. That seems like a Latin family thing.
Big Booty Becky.
Right?
I have a couple questions.
Yes.
Why don't you want your mom to meet him? Not like, why doesn't he want to meet your mom, but you specifically, why do you not want your mom to meet him?
He's already got a bias against him, I think.
Okay.
She has a bias
against
him.
I think she already has like an idea of who he is in her head, and I don't think it's accurate. And I think she needs to work through that before she meets somebody I care about like this.
Sure. Gotcha. That's funny because Angie's mom had a bias, not a bias, but she felt a certain type of way about us because we met really quick and she wanted Angie to slow down too.
Okay. So your mom has, you think she has a bias, but she hasn't communicated. Yeah. That's just what you think. So you think she has a bias.
Well, she's communicated it.
Okay. Okay. So your mom has a bias.
she done told me.
Do you think that if you were to have her meet him, that could squash the bias so she could see he's not who you think he is?
Or are you scared that her bias is correct? Because let me tell you something. My mom was right 99% of the time with the people that I was dating, and I kept them from her because I didn't want to hear her tell me the truth about who I was dating.
I think that I think she's wrong. I know she's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she is charging my boyfriend's account for the mistakes other men have debited.
Mm-hmm. Got you.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that.
And it's not his fault.
Yeah. No, yeah. I get it.
And my mom is very, I get what you're saying about the Latin thing, because my mom is very Mediterranean. I grew up in Europe. So
got you.
We're white, but she's very Mediterranean.
Right.
So yeah.
I can see that. Look, at some point, if this person is important to you, you're going to have to rip the Band-Aid. You know what I'm saying? Because it's either that or just never kick it with your moms. It's like one of those things.
Oh, yeah, that can happen.
You know, and more importantly, though, you kind of want your mom to, you want her to be wrong, you know? And it's not that, like, your boyfriend needs to do, like, an act. But if this person is important and you see him in your future, I would just be like, if I was him, put it this way, if I was him, I would want to go meet your mom's. Not for any other reason, not that it's saying more than what it should be saying, because obviously you've only been dating for 4 months, but I would want to meet your mom's just for the fact that, yeah, I would love to show her that I'm a good dude, you know, just to make your life easier. Hmm. Does that make sense? Not so that I can try to prove that I'm some good dude, but just like, okay, well, I know that you love your family, and because you love your family, let me just go over there and let me just put their doubts to rest. And for your sake, so that this can be a lot smoother relationship, especially if it's something that's important. Now, if y'all just kicking it and it's just kind of like a, you know, pandemic fling thing, then I wouldn't worry about it. You know, if that nickname is more than that, you know,
4 months is a long time to me. Like, I was engaged in 4 months, but I went fast.
Yeah.
I think it's not a pandemic fling because we live in two different states. So to see each other, one of us has to drive 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And I'm the one who generally does the driving. And that's something that my mom is like, that seems like a red flag if you do the driving all the time.
What's his name? What's his name?
His name?
Yeah.
Code words.
His name is Franklin.
Franklin. Okay.
Franklin. Yeah.
Why, you know him, babe?
No, I'm just thinking that like, if she's doing most of the driving, then what I'm saying is, do you have a nickname for him? Because I have an idea for one.
Well, tell me one.
Okay. So he's calling you Big Booty Becky, so you need to call him Gas Money Franklin. That fool better be coming up with some gas money if you're driving 2.5 hours every time. Look, I'm gonna tell you real quick, because we're gonna go on to the next call. I think if it's important, I think that he should go out of his way to just meet him, put everything to rest, and if after she meets him, she's still just biased, then at least you'll have that to tell her, hey man, like, we tried, he came over here, he was very respectful, very kind, wanted to meet you, you just don't want to like him, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But now you won't be wondering why we don't come over here or why he doesn't want to, you know, hang out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That would be the best advice. Just rip the Band-Aid off, have him go over there. And
yeah, the other thing too I was thinking about is, like, your mom obviously has this idea of who she thinks she is. The only thing that's going to trump that idea of who she thinks is her experience of him, right?
Correct.
Experiences are the only thing that could trump ideas. You communicating this idea of who he is and how good of a guy he is, she could continue to pigeonhole that thing. And it's not until she's actually exposed to an experience that that idea can actually be replaced with how you know him.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I agree with Manny.
Well said. Thank you so much for being on the call. We appreciate you.
Thanks for calling, you guys.
Of course.
I hope you have a great night. Great advice. Good
you
job.
Too. Let us know how it goes.
Triple B.
Hit me back and let me know how it goes.
BBB.
You got it, Manny.
All right. Have a good night. Bye. Okay, Queen, there was another one that was for you, which is actually quite personal.
Ooh.
Mind your business.
Whoa. Okay.
I love you guys. I have a question for Angela, and I hope I'm not too late for questions. Have you ever felt neglected by Manny? And if you did, at some point, how did you deal with it?
Every night when I go to bed. Just kidding. And I say, babe.
Are you coming to bed?
Are you coming to bed? After this episode. After this movie. I'm watching a movie.
Yo, because Ann's be trying to go to bed like at 8:30, man. I'm like.
But I don't want to like go to sleep at 8:30. I want him to come cuddle me. Come spend time with me. And he'd be like, babe, I'm watching my show. And I'll be like, can you for once choose me over your show? And I get real dramatic about it.
Oh, my God.
But in real talk, have I ever felt neglected?
Yes.
No, I think we communicate very clearly. Our needs and it sounds like a silly thing, like the can you come to bed, but every now and then I get serious about it and I'm like, no, for real, like, come and connect with me. Like, we don't have to do sexy time, we don't have to do nothing, but just come be with me. And but I'm unwinding, I'm doing my thing, I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But just choose me right now. And it's a very simple thing.
That was more back in the day. Now, even to
do you
even,
mean Tuesday?
No, because even now when you say come be with me and I'll be like, babe. But even at this house, I've been turning out to TV and just coming. Like, yeah, it's like maybe once or twice that I stayed outside. Yeah, like, I'm not just staying outside. Because then I'll walk in and you'll do the, to what do I owe the honor?
I do that all the time.
Because I'd be coming in. So
when he finally comes to the bed and I see him walk in, I go, oh, excuse me, to what do I owe the honor?
Okay, your sex life is bad. Not just mediocre, it's terrible.
Oh.
You just don't seem compatible in bed at all, no matter how many times you've tried. Do you end the relationship?
I mean, are you married? I need more backstory, but...
Okay, let's give both examples.
Communication.
If you're not married, obviously, you can... But, okay, okay, this is the thing.
There we go.
Remember we had the conversation before at one of the... Like, season one, where it was like, being a believer now, right? Mm-hmm. If, say, you died or I died and mm-hmm. you had to go back out into the market, or Maddie Boom Bilati mm-hmm. died. Mm-hmm. If somebody died and you had to go back out there, would you be abstinent before you get married?
Hell no.
And we were all kind of like, I don't know. Sex is a really big deal. We'd want to know what's going on. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
What if you have your partner and you love everything about them, mm-hmm. but sex ain't popping?
Work on it. Let's figure it out. Let's try some toys.
No matter how much you tried, it's not compatible.
I wonder how long that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is there a time frame?
Yeah. I mean, for that time frame, it would probably be different for different people. Like, if you've been in this relationship now and we're crossing that yearly, two-yearly mm-hmm. mark, and it's like everything that we've tried to do to improve our sex life hasn't helped and it's still terrible, and you still love... Yeah. I don't know. Like, to me, that's like...
But think about it. What if everything else is freaking dope?
They're your best friend. That's it.
Yeah, that's...
You be besties.
But you want to be with that person. Like, you legit... Like, you... Like, okay, let's be honest. Most of the time in a marriage, you spend way more time being normal friends than you do having sexy time. Mm-hmm. Way more. Like, it's not even close. We're all married here. We spend 95% of the time doing normal life stuff, walking dogs, meetings, you know, jobs,
choosing what we're going to eat for dinner.
So many things. And then this 5% of the time is carved out for intimacy. And it's not like bad. It's just that you have normal jobs, which are 8 hours. You know, you have kids, you have all these things. So most people have to attempt to plan intimacy, right? So would you give up 80, 90% of awesomeness because of this other half was struggling? Or do you write your own rules? Which is, I'm laughing because I'm watching Sex and the City, the movie, part two. And in this one, Mr. Big says, hey, and I thought about this because it was funny. I feel like this is something we would do. He goes, she went to her old apartment for 2 days to work on writing. Mm-hmm. And she got so much done in those 2 days. And he was able to stay home and do his thing. So he had the idea of, hey, why don't we do, like, make this a thing? We both pick 2 days during the week where you go do whatever you want. I'm going to go do whatever I want. So we don't have to, like, force ourselves to do things that we don't want to do. Like, he just wants to sit and watch TV. She wants to go write. She wants to go be with her friends. 2 days, you do you. I'm going to do me. And then the other five, we're together. And in the movie, she's like, we're grown. We can write our own rules. Like, we don't have to follow mm-hmm. what society says. Mm-hmm. So in this predicament, do you write your own rules or do you write it all off?
It really depends on how good that 95% is.
Yeah.
Is it worth it to, you know, this 5%? I mean, can you help yourself? And is that going to be all right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what works for you?
Yeah. Mm. It's okay. So a little bit like that 5%, although it's like a time elapsed, what that 5% though means for the whole is more than 5%.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So to me, it's like Maddie and I, we just passed 4 years. So we're still kind of like, we're newlyweds, mm-hmm. right? But like, to me, that's been the thing that's helped deepen our relationship on a whole nother level. Mm-hmm. Like, if that wasn't there, a lot of the other stuff we would do would be amazing still,
mm-hmm.
but that adds a whole nother layer to it.
Sure.
Right. So I'm thinking like, yo, I could, like, if that wasn't that, and say we're dating, like if we were married, hey, I'm going to do everything I can. I promise to like fight for her. She's going to fight for me. We're going to try to work on this. But say we weren't married. Say we're just like, yo, this is a dope thing we got going on. And if it was bad, it would be one of those things where it'd be really tough to be like, man, what you were saying, like, I just think like, then that's just, that's a really best friend that you have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but take it one step further. What if somebody got in a car wreck and they can't perform?
Well, then we rewrite in all kind of rules.
No, but I'm saying what does that 5% now mean then?
Like, does your penis not work?
Yeah, like you can't function. Or like this woman that was talking about the anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
Like the person's trying to fight to get healthier, but you know, a lot of men have this problem. Like for whatever, you know, impotent. Is it impotent? Or yeah, erectile dysfunction. Erectile dysfunction. And it's not like they don't want their junk not to work. Mm-hmm. But what if whatever it is, they're fighting, they're going to therapy, they're doing all this stuff, but their junk don't work. Do you then bail? Or do you come up with a new rule? Do you know? Is it Lucky Tuesdays and he gets to, you know, you get to go be with somebody else and the guy's okay? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. It's
that's tough because to me it's different situations now. Like that bad sex, because you can't help it, like there's nothing that could actually change or work on that in that sort of situation, that's different. That's just like, it's tough.
But the, like, bad sex, it seems that what they're saying is they're not trying.
Oh,
because it says they've tried everything, which means both parties are fully committed to trying to make this thing pop, but for whatever reason it's not popping. I think about really big dudes that are with really small chicks. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like the guy's really big and the girl's really small, love each other, but anatomically it's not the bomb.
I feel like in this situation, if you've tried everything sexually and it's not working and it's actually now starting to affect your relationship, maybe you are just best friends and maybe that's Sheesh. It
yeah
all
maybe,
right
maybe you're just best friends, or maybe you're an open relationship and we have an understanding. I love you and everything about you and I don't want to lose you, so go hook up with this person so you can get satisfied and fulfilled in that area. I don't know. Maybe some people are okay with that. And if that works for you, that works for you. So maybe that's something to consider. Or maybe you guys are just best friends. Mm.
Well said, Queen. I'm not even going to be mad at that. Okay, so this other one. How do you and Angie handle issues with family? And you both disagree or don't see eye to eye? Example, and I'll open this up to everybody. Say your wife feels a family member is being rude or not nice and you disagree. Do you stand in solidarity and have her back, or just talk to her, tell her sorry, but you don't agree? Does that make sense?
Mm. I got lost there for a second.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so she's saying like, what if, okay, so we've had this issue where a family member may be a certain type of way with me. Mm-hmm. And I come to you and I say, yo, this person is being this way. If you don't address it, we're going to have problems. So she's asking, do you defend me and stand in solidarity with me? Or do you tell me, I don't agree? Or you take your family's, you support your family instead of your husband.
What have you seen in that? With us,
with me and you.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen both, depending on what we're talking about. I've seen times where I initially you don't know why I am the way I am. Like I remember when you were not upset, but you were kind of like feeling a certain type of way because I would retreat. Like we would go have family things and I would retreat and kind of be solo dolo. Mm-hmm. And for a while, and you know, she would get upset about it. And then finally we got into it one day and I told her, you know, the reason that I retreat is because I noticed the way you and your family like to make fun of each other. Like they're all really quick, really smart, really like very good at making fun of each other.
Mm-hmm.
I would notice that when I was around, I became a butt of a lot of the jokes. So I have hella supreme confidence. We've already established it. So the jokes don't bother me on an emotional level, but I get annoyed where I'm like, oh, okay, let me just remove myself so I don't deal with, because I'll get annoyed quick. And if somebody says the wrong thing at the wrong time, I'm going to make it real awkward really quick. And I'm not going to be apologetic about it. Mm-hmm. So I would remove myself and just kind of like tuck in the corners, watch TV, do my own thing, you know? So when I told her about it, I don't think it's happened since then. Cause now I'm like super tight with everybody in the fam, but I don't remember her, picking their sides. I think there's certain times where we may disagree on certain things where it does cause her to decide family or me. And there's one instance, which I won't bring up. If you want to bring it up, you can. I totally would bring it up, but I don't want to get in trouble afterwards, where I was asking her to choose me over the family. And for a long time in the relationship, she chose the family, you know? And so that was really difficult. So I've seen, that's why I say I've seen both. I've seen you ride for me on some of the medium little things, and then on certain big things, it's been family first.
Well, I feel like the first thing, like with Manny retreating, I also had to recognize that I have a big, overwhelming family. Mm-hmm. And so like on Christmas, when we're all together and he's like, okay, I'm going to go to the movies and watch a movie by myself. At first, I'd be pissed and I'd be like, what? How rude. You're leaving my family, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But then I had to really like recognize that he's not used to a lot of family. He's not used to celebrating holidays with his family at all. So all of this can be very overwhelming. And like, I came to a point where it's like, okay, I'm grateful you're here and you partook in the first half. And then now it's kind of like, okay, now Manny goes and he leaves to the movies and that's his thing that he does. And it's like an understanding that we have. But at first that was difficult for me to reconcile, because I was like, no, this is what we do. We start early in the morning and we're here till the night, and this is how we do it.
Yeah, family is tough because you wanna defend family. But with me, I always defend Ange. Like, I don't know if there's ever a time where my family made her feel a certain type of way, but it wouldn't even have been a problem. It's, like, yeah, I'm going Ange first no matter what.
Because I'm amazing is what it is.
No, because I understand the order of things. Like,
yeah, because like once I made that commitment, it's like Maddie was and is the most important person in my life.
Has to be.
So it's that. Like that family trumps the other family. Mm-hmm. Even though like that other family, we have all these memories and history together, whatever. I did notice like outside, so when I was in my last relationship before Maddie, like her family used to just get on me, man. Like just for random shit. Like
really?
It was just dumb. And I never felt stood up for. Like I always felt like I was like a lone ranger. Yeah, I would.
Shit. I'll like, fight a dad real quick. I'm not even playing. I will fight a dad real quick.
It was tough, like if the dad's really old, like then you just feel like
don't matter. if he's old enough to run his mouth.
What, Brandon, tell us.
He's already falling apart. Like I don't want to add to that. Like my man, but yeah, that became a thing actually in the relationship that was like one of the things that contributed to me saying, like, yeah, this is done, this is not gonna work.
Yeah.
Was because I always felt like, and I kind of projected it too. Like I'm thinking, if we're just in boyfriend girlfriend type relationship, and you don't have my back now, like in these situations where it's clear I'm very right, I'm in the right place, like I don't think this is gonna happen. You ain't really here for me.
Yeah.
But again, I get it, because obviously I'm not in her life anymore. She's not in my life anymore, and she still can stand with her family or whatever. So it kind of depends too on like what it is.
It's like, codependency for me. Like I've always, to me, I'm just kind of a kind of person that, especially with this person that you're asking, like with your family, like you need to stand up for yourself. Like you really do. If your significant other isn't going to, then I think you need to be the one to stand up. Like don't just get walked over, because what's going to happen is you're going to start resenting the entire situation.
That's a good point.
And you're going to let it fester, and it's going to turn into something negative. At least by you speaking up and having your own back and setting things straight, like for yourself, standing up for yourself, it may be awkward for a second, but it's going to force everybody to take sides. And not that you want people to take sides against each other, but you've been put in a place where you don't have a choice. Hmm. if nobody is going to stand up and say something, then you need to stand up for yourself. And either your husband is going to be okay with the awkwardness of you always speaking your mind, or he's going to stand up and say, yo, y'all need to not play with her, like, or him or whatever. You know what I'm saying? You got to stand. The only time I've ever been in a situation like that, it was with in my own you know, group, when I almost got, whatchamacallit, in a fight with a dad, because this dude was trying me.
Dad fights.
Yeah, he it was a relationship. It was a friendship. And he was trying to get me to pay for some electricity. Mm-hmm. I was helping his son record an album, his son's album. Mm-hmm. And I would go over there every day for like 6 months. Not only did I help record his son's album, but I paid for it, right? And out of nowhere, I had my microphone over there, I had some equipment over there, and out of nowhere, the guy was like, hits me up out of nowhere and is like, hey, I need you to pay for electricity bills. This is what he's asking me for. Mm-hmm. And I was like, sir, you do understand that I was recording your son's record. He's like, well, I have the mic here, I have this here, I'm not giving it to you until you pay for my electricity bills, for all the times that you guys were in the studio.
Wow.
And at that point, and obviously this is friendship, but I think the point I'm trying to make is I had to stand up for myself, and I made it awkward. And for me, I'm very confrontational. So I told him,
there's the eight.
Sir, I will be at your house in 20 minutes. You haven't known me pre-Jesus, but you're about to meet the pre-Jesus me. If you do not have my microphone outside waiting for me, I'm going to knock your ass out. If your son gets in the way, I'm going to knock his ass out. If your other son gets in the way, we're all fighting. And I'm saved at this point. But I literally told him, please test me on this. See if I do not show up in your house and you try to keep my mic from me. Watch how you will see the old Manny. I will be there in 20 minutes. That microphone was waiting on the stoop. And I was dead serious. If he would not have given my microphone, me and him would have. If I hit my dad, I will hit you. Like, I have no qualms with it. And never spoke to him again. Hmm. But I stood up for myself and I made clear borders, clear lines.
Yeah.
It's what you got
to
do.
And that son, he went on to record he's Justin Bieber.
Okay, last one. We're at an hour. This is a deep one. So going on year six in a relationship, we have almost a 2-year-old daughter and live together. Relationship started off with dishonesty. He just ended a 6-year relationship, but originally told me it was 8 months. He also lied about his name the first time we met. He was 23 and doing what he grew up seeing his Jamaican upbringing. I was 27 and grew up in a Christian home. 2 years into our relationship, he cheated with a stripper one drunken night. I found out because my doctor called. I forgave that too, because I knew I wasn't fully doing my part as a partner and woman. He's 28 now and has done a complete 180 from who he was when we met. It still took me 3 years to forgive him for cheating, but up until 3 months ago, I didn't realize how much I contributed to the issues in our relationship because of all the childhood trauma that I have, i.e. trust issues that my mom taught me, controlling and insecurity. We've come so far from that, yet I still find myself so angry at him sometimes and wonder if me forgiving him, despite all the changes he's made, was me not valuing my own worth? How do you know someone has fully changed? Can someone like that be fully trusted? I also question if I'm even allowed to be happy in our life, being that we're living together and with our daughter and we're not married. At the same time, after realizing I was carrying around so much trauma, I understand why he was never in a rush for marriage.
Well, that's a lot.
That's a lot, right?
It's one of those things where I wonder how much she actually really trusts him. Mm-hmm. Because if this wasn't just a one-time occurrence, like this wasn't just like, hey, I slipped up. But this has been a thing that's been ongoing. Mm-hmm. And it's not just to break that sort of commitment that you made to somebody, but it's a whole nother thing to like lie about it and hide it. And it's another thing when you have the tendency to just lie. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of those tough things, because if like at the end of the day, if you don't fully trust this person, like, what do you really have in the relationship? Mm-hmm. Now, again, are people capable of changing? Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, the question that she has to ask herself is, am I willing to be here long enough to see that change? And am I the person that is supposed to walk with them to make these changes in their life? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because it's one of those things, especially cheating relationships. I feel like cheaters are just are cheaters, man. Like if you...
Well, there's two kinds of cheaters.
Like it's...
There's cheaters who may have cheated and then can't live with themselves, so they come clean. And then there's cheaters who cheat and will not come clean until they get caught.
Yeah.
Two very different kinds of people. Very different kinds of people. And I've experienced both. I've seen people who have cheated for, you know, I don't want to say good reasons, but they had their reason. It was a valid reason. They came clean and that's what it was. Then I've known people who cheated and would only feel bad when they got caught. Mm. And then they would cheat again. And only you would only find out when somebody caught them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's different because it's not there's like a repented heart or somebody who really feels bad. It's just like I think they more feel bad that they got caught.
Yeah.
So I think young lady, you need to find out which one is he.
She asked a question in that. I don't remember exactly how she phrased it, but something along the lines of like, was she not, by her forgiving him, and was that her not valuing herself?
And we've come so far from that, yet I still find myself so angry with him at times, wondering if by me forgiving him, despite all the changes he's made, was me not valuing my own worth. So she did say he did a 180.
So my thoughts to that is, if he really has changed and you see it and it's visible and the proof is in the pudding that he actually has done a 180, it's not he's telling you he's done a 180, but you see it yourself that he's done a 180, then I think you choosing to forgive him is not you not valuing yourself. That's you being a participant of this relationship and trying to make the relationship work. And sometimes we sacrifice in different areas. Now, if he's still being the way he was and you're making excuses for him, then I would say, yeah, you're not valuing yourself.
Well, it's interesting what she says. She says he's 28 now and has done a complete 180 from who he was when we met. It still took me 3 years to forgive him for cheating. But up until 3 months ago, I didn't realize how much I contributed to the issues of our relationship because of all my childhood trauma. So I think she's so balanced. First, because she's able to acknowledge that she played a part in it. Mm-hmm. Most people, when the other person cheats, they want to blame every single thing on that person. And there are times where it is 100% you did everything right and mm-hmm. that other person is just, like you said, a cheater.
Yeah.
But in order, you know, in a lot of situations, it's good to know that she can see, you know, I played a part in it too. Mm-hmm. And the thing that strikes me here when I read this is that she says, it took me 3 years to forgive him for cheating. That means there was 3 long years of him.
What happened in them 3 years?
Of him staying with her not trusting him. Mm-hmm. So that obviously meant that he changed.
That's a lot of, that's 3 years worth of a lot of every time he leaves to go grab some food. Like, oh, okay, Burger King. That's what her name is now. Burger King. Okay.
It's a lot. And obviously, she's admitting that he has changed. So I think it's brave that you would even mention this. Because I think the beautiful thing is that there's nothing more amazing to see somebody who was quote unquote horrible to actually make a real change mm-hmm. and who's willing to stick around and show you that change. And mm-hmm. I think it doesn't mean that you don't know your worth by forgiving him. I think you're truly understanding what it means to be forgiven.
And human.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's easy to not forgive.
Yeah.
It's very hard to understand why God forgives us, but yet we don't extend that same forgiveness for other people. Mm-hmm. So I think there's nothing more brave than to forgive someone when you've seen that they've changed, and nothing more holy than to not throw the past in their face. Because if we had the same type of treatment by God or by our friends around us, I don't think you would enjoy being told every 2 seconds all the things that you've done wrong.
Right.
So bravo for you being able to notice your own trauma. I kind of feel like you've probably done some therapy. Bravo for you calling yourself out and taking responsibility. And bravo for both of y'all fighting for this thing, you know? very kudos. I don't know your name, but I'm grateful that you wrote in, and I'm grateful that everybody else wrote in, and I'm grateful for everybody who's watching live. We want to do this more. I have an idea now how we're going to be able to put the calls so that everybody can hear them. So next time we do this, the calls will be audible for everybody. This is our first time doing it, but if you guys dig it, please hit us up on the DMs on Facebook. We answer all the time. Comment on YouTube. Hit us in Instagram. And a big shout out to our Patreon members. Yeah. Some of them are probably watching right now. We love you guys so much. Thank you for supporting the podcast financially. It means the world. If any of you guys want to know what that's about, it'll be in the description. It's patreon.com/NATRT. Or you can go to the link in our Instagram. Everywhere, there's a link tree, and you can sign up and support. We love you guys so much, and this is what we like to say at the end of every episode. We pray that you guys find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you are always welcome at ours. Cheers.
Cheers.
When the sun goes down and the beast comes out, we're the wild, we're the wild, we're the wild ones. Better run, for we hunt you down. We're the wild, we're the wild, we're the wild ones. So you see at night, don't let me in, I got appetites. You look so good, I may take a bite. Dark fantasy, but that's what I like. When the sun goes down and the beast comes out, we're the wild, we're the wild, we're the